All right, good morning, everyone. David and I have assembled at the Bree and Mike. And David, we're looking at an article from Thomas Sowell. What's the title of it?
The Fallacy of Redistribution.
All right, David, why are people talking about redistribution of wealth right now with a new flavor or freshness?
Yeah, it's obviously it's been around for the last few years, but it's kind of taken on a new relevance in the last few days because a video of the president has surfaced from back in 1998 in which he doesn't cut any corners, doesn't pull any punches, and says flat out that he believes in redistribution of wealth.
All right, so last night I was watching a television show, and the commentator said that I need to read this article, The Fallacy of Redistribution. He said it was excellent. And so I went to the website, couldn't even get on. It was over. I mean, it was the servers were packed, so I got up this morning and saw it. And you tweeted about it?
Yep, I put a tweet out last night. I heard an interview with Thomas Sowell the other day and looked up the same article.
So. He's an American economist, social theorist, political philosopher, and author. And since this is a podcast, we also want to tell you he's African American. He's a National Humanities Medal winner. He is currently the Rose and Milton Friedman Senior Fellow on Public Policy at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. He is a graduate of Harvard, Cornell University, Brandeis University, Urban University, UCLA. Wow. So he's got a significant education background. So, David, get into the article.
It says, the recently discovered tape on which Barack Obama said back in 1998 that he believes in redistribution is not really news. He said the same thing to Joe the Plumber 4 years ago. But the surfacing of this tape may serve a useful purpose if it gets people to thinking about what the consequences of redistribution are. Those who talk glibly about redistribution often act as if people are just inert objects that can be placed here and there, like pieces on a chessboard, to carry out some grand design. But if human beings have their own responses to government policies, then we cannot blithely assume that government policies will have the effect intended.
The history of the 20th century is full of examples of countries that set out to redistribute wealth and ended up redistributing poverty. Now that is an amazing statement right there. That's really his thesis, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That goes to the title, The Fallacy of Redistribution, that this redistribution of wealth is a fallacious concept. It is actually a redistribution of poverty.
Interestingly, if I could just do a sidebar for just a second, David, you know, the lottery proves this to be the case over and over and over and over again. The statistics are overwhelming. That if you win the lottery, you're probably going to end up declaring bankruptcy. And if you hadn't won the lottery, you probably would never have declared bankruptcy. Now, just think about that.
Yeah, the stories are overwhelming in that means. And he'll cover a little bit of that sort of a little bit later in the article about physical wealth does not necessarily mean lasting financial success.
Right. The communist nations were a classic example, but by no means the only example. In theory, confiscating the wealth of more successful people ought to make the rest of society more prosperous. Now, the word confiscating there is an interesting word because we would never think of it as being confiscated.
Right.
It's taxed.
Yeah.
Right. Tax just doesn't sound like confiscated, does it?
Right.
But when the Soviet Union confiscated the wealth of successful farmers, food became scarce as many people died of starvation under Stalin in the 1930s as died under Hitler's Holocaust in the 1940s. Most people don't know that.
No, we don't talk about that. Not at all.
How can that be? It is not complicated. You can only confiscate the wealth that exists at a given moment. You cannot confiscate future wealth, and that future wealth is less likely to be produced when people see that it is going to be confiscated. Unpack that, David, because that is key.
Yeah, he is talking about you can make a temporary solution. You know, I guess that's the idea. He says in theory above, you know, on paper it looks really good. You know, on paper socialism seems like it's a really good idea and it's going to be extra fair and everybody's going to get a fair shake. But when it comes down to it, that's not how it shakes out. And so he talks about we could take wealth from an individual at a given moment and give it to somebody else. But in the long run, if people know that the government is coming to take their money, they're going to take steps to make sure that money is not going to be taken at the same rate that it was that first time.
Right, and that's the idea of the future wealth.
Right.
The future wealth. You're literally taking away from me the incentive to continue to make money.
Why would I want to make more money if you're just going to take more of it? Absolutely.
France right now as a nation is operating at the peak of its tax at 75%. Can you imagine working here at the church and you know that $3 out of every $4 is going to be confiscated? Yeah. Where is the incentive?
Yeah, and we've been there in this country in that tax rate. I looked up some history here and just some theory on taxes. And, you know, it's 1913, the 16th Amendment passes, and we have an income tax. And in the 1960s, the top marginal tax rate was
90%. 90%?
1960s in America, 90% top marginal tax rate. So if a family earning, here's one, 88%. Then a family earning $300,000 each year would only have $36,000 left after taxes, which is less than an average American owns.
That's insane, isn't it? I mean, what's enough? You keep on hearing, I hear, you hear, fair. Right. You need to pay their fair share.
Right.
What's fair?
And on top of that, I was looking up some of this stuff in the past, and the higher tax rates don't work. And so I just pulled out a couple numbers. 1963, the top tax rate was 91%, and the total federal tax revenue that they collected in 1963 with a 91% top level tax rate was 17.8% of the GDP.
Right.
In 1988, our top tax rate was 28%. The total federal tax revenue was 18.2% of the GDP. So, regardless of what the tax rate has been, from 91 to 28, the average range of the amount of taxes collected is 18 to 20%. It does not change. I've got a graph here. You can see it. The tax rates are way up high. The federal collection is exactly the same.
Wow. There's no... If you look at that graph, we wish we could show it to you and you could look in here, but there's no relationship. I mean, there's absolutely no correlation whatsoever. High, low, it really doesn't matter. This is an amazingly straight line, and this other line is up, down, all over the place, and dropping all the way down to 40% right here. This one here is 20-some, maybe 22 or so, somewhere around there. Wow. And we'll figure out a way to put the link there so that you can look at that. Farmers in the Soviet Union cut back on how much time and effort they invested in growing their crops. When they realized that the government was going to take a big part of the harvest, they slaughtered and ate young animals, young farm animals that were normally keep tending and feeding while raising them to maturity. Hey, if the government's going to take it, I'm just going to go ahead and eat it now.
I'm going to get the most out of it.
There's no incentive for me to keep feeding this thing if I'm going to lose that cow in the first place and never get to enjoy that steak.
Definitely. People in industry are not inert objects either. Moreover, unlike farmers, and I think this is a key point, industrialists are not tied to the land in a particular country. Russian aviation pioneer Igor Sikorsky could take his expertise to America and produce his planes and helicopters thousands of miles away from his native land. Financiers are even less tied down, especially today when the vast sums of money can be dispatched electronically to any part of the world.
So I can stay here in this country, David, and then take my money and put it somewhere anywhere else. I want globally.
Absolutely, that's why
I'm not a
companies.
Farmer. I don't have to. I don't have to have 300 acres to stay on. I can live wherever I want, and through the global economy, I can invest and do anything I want with my money.
And I can put my businesses overseas, and I can produce things more cheaply, and I don't have to be under the same tax burden.
If confiscatory policies can produce counterproductive repercussions in a dictatorship, they are even harder to carry out in a democracy. A dictatorship can suddenly swoop down and grab whatever it wants, but a democracy must first have public discussions and debates. Those who are targeted for confiscation can see the handwriting on the wall and act accordingly. They're not stupid, David.
Yeah.
They see what's going to happen. They know that they can't do it instantly, so they take steps ahead of time to keep it from happening to them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can see it with these elections. I mean, we'll know when that whatever candidate is elected in November, these businesses will know. All right, well, if Obama is elected, my tax rate's going to be about this. If Romney is elected, my tax rate's going to be about this, and they will act immediately on that. On that assumption,
they'll make decisions.
Yeah,
they'll know that policies are going to affect in either direction, and they will act accordingly. And in the world that we're living in, they can do it with the keystrokes on a keyboard instantly,
very quickly. Yeah.
Very quickly, they don't have to send dispatches. And I mean, it's unbelievable how fast wealth can be moved.
Yeah. So by the time an act, a tax, or whatever is passed through Congress and voted on and through the House and through the Senate, that money's long gone. That money's somewhere else because they can do it that fast.
Not able to be confiscated.
Absolutely.
Among the most valuable assets in any nation are knowledge, skills, and productive experience that economists call human capital. When successful people with much human capital leave the country, either voluntarily or because of hostile governments or hostile mobs whipped up by demagogues,
mm-hmm.
exploiting envy, lasting damage can be done to the economy they leave behind.
He brings up Fidel Castro. His confiscatory policies drove successful Cubans to flee to Florida, often leaving much of their physical wealth behind. So these men would leave Cuba without any money. Leave all the money they had back there.
But what they take is their own personal human capital.
Right. The initiative to, they're not going to live under those conditions. They're going to go for their own initiative. And it says, but poverty-stricken refugees rose to prosperity again in Florida, while the wealth they left behind in Cuba did not prevent the people there from being poverty-stricken under Castro. The lasting wealth the refugees took with them was their human capital.
Right. And so these people who left behind everything, and you know, we have these stories in America.
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing. They invest all they have in a startup business. It doesn't work. They declare bankruptcy, David, but they still have such drive and initiative mm-hmm. that they do it all over again, and they find something new, and that becomes the success for them.
Right.
And so it is not a matter of the fact that they receive this money, and so therefore they have this leg up. It's their drive, it's their mm-hmm. initiative, it's their knowledge, it's their work ethic, and that's what we are losing.
Mm-hmm. And I think it goes on. We can trace this to the laziness that comes out when you're given these handouts. You know, I've heard the president say recently that everybody should have the ability to go to college, and that sounds great on paper. But if I don't have to work to get there, if I don't have to put in my kind of work, develop a work ethic in order to succeed and gain this knowledge, why would I value that education? Why would I value that ability to go to college?
Look, David, if I'm not working a part-time job in order to pay for my school bill, so therefore, you know what, I really need to pay attention in this class because mm-hmm. I'm paying money for this professor to educate me. But if I'm getting a Pell Grant and this grant and that grant and another grant and another grant, and really it didn't cost me anything and there's no out-of-pocket expense, and it doesn't really bite me, so to speak, in that fourth point of contact, mm-hmm. then where's my drive?
Yeah, there's no reason to have it.
There's not.
I mean, we see it with our kids. You know, you give a kid something and they're not going to value it as much as if they had to work for it and get it.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's common sense, and yet we want to run our government.
Away from that. Yeah. We're absolutely walking away from that. And, you know, David, I want to take exception with the idea that everybody needs to go to college.
Yeah.
I disagree with that.
Right. You know, it's as politically incorrect as it sounds, and, you know, we're in America, and you can be anything you want to be, but that's just not the reality.
No, that is not the reality. Some people can never be chemists. Some people can never be nuclear physicists. Some people need to be plumbers. Some people need to be carpenters.
Mm-hmm.
Some people need to be managers of restaurants, and on and on and on. And we should not demean them as less than others.
Yeah.
And if that's their passion, if God gives them talents and abilities towards that end, and they make a valuable contribution to society in providing a great dining experience, then they should be rewarded for that. And you don't necessarily need a college education to do that well.
Right, and there's value in it, and there's honor in it.
And they are God-glorifying.
Yeah,
they are
absolutely.
Glorifying God in using that. And that's much more God-glorifying than sitting through a college class pulling C's for 4 years
mm-hmm.
and getting some piece of paper that's only almost meaningless to you.
Right.
Let's see. So he talks about Fidel. He says, "We have all heard the old saying that giving a man a fish feeds him only for a day, while teaching him to fish feeds him for a lifetime." So we say that, but yet there's no indication we understand that concept.
Oh, not at all. It seems like common sense. And, you know, I heard a comedian once say that, you know, if you want to feed a man for a day, give him a fish. And if you want to feed him for a lifetime, you know, don't teach him to fish, because fishing's not that hard. You know, it's not that hard to grasp
right.
the concept here.
You don't even need to be taught.
No, not at all.
You don't even need to be taught. If the redistributionists were serious, what they would want is to redistribute is the ability to fish or to be productive in other ways. Knowledge is one of the few things that can be distributed to people without reducing the amount held by others. Now, that is just a beautiful statement.
It is. I don't have to take from someone else to gain my own advantages in life. That would better serve the interests of the poor, but it would not serve the interests of politicians who want to exercise power and to get the votes of people who are dependent on them. And I think that's exactly what we've got going on. It's what I talked about the other day with Romney's statement. You know, as much as people don't like what he said, the fact of the matter is there is a large percentage of people in this country that are going to vote for one candidate because their meal ticket is on the line. And they're not going to give that up for any other issues, because they want their checks, they want their assistance, they want to be taken care of.
And you know, and he may not have been right with his 47%.
Right.
That's not the issue. The issue is that there is a percentage of Americans who are very content to receive free money.
Yes.
Money that they did not work for. It doesn't make them uncomfortable. There's not a stigma associated with it. Their pride or their dignity is not impacted in any way, shape, or form. And those people will continue to vote for a nanny state.
Yeah. And I found another quote here that might kind of lend in a little bit more to the discussion as far as what this this results in our government structure. It says, even if we could eliminate the rich, even if we could make everybody equal, the accumulated windfall tax revenue would still end up in the hands of bureaucratic central planners under the false pretense that a single planner can act as an architect of the economic activity of millions of market actors. And in the Theory of Moral Sentiments, this is 1759, Adam Smith, probably the father of modern economics, he says, that a man of system, this man, this central planner that's going to run everything, says, such a man is apt to be very wise in his own conceit, and is often so enamored with the supposed beauty of his ideal plan of government that he cannot suffer the smallest deviation from any part of it. Mm. And if that's not what we're seeing in our government today, I don't know, and that's 1759.
200 plus years ago. and he is so enamored with himself.
Yes.
And the master plan that he has, and the way he's going to make society look a particular way.
Yes.
And what people don't seem to understand is that when that master planner begins to recreate society the way he wants, you're losing freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You're losing freedom. And America has been successful. The American exceptionalism is because of the freedom that someone has to leave Cuba or to leave Russia and come here flat broke, not a penny in their pocket,
right.
And they become millionaires.
Right.
They become incredibly wealthy people. And of course, from a Christian perspective, wealth is not what drives our train. That's not what we're saying here.
Mm-hmm.
But from a perspective of having a society that minimizes the percentage that's poor and maximizes the percentage that are doing well, you need to have a capitalistic society. That's all there is to it. Show me a socialist society that's done well.
Yeah, and show me a socialist society that has put any kind of emphasis on God. The fundamental undergirding of a socialist worldview is you've got to remove God from the equation. Because that separates us. That divides us. That puts us into born again and unsaved. That saved and lost
categories.
Yeah, and you can't have that in socialism. And so we cannot be set apart in a socialistic society. We have to blend in with everybody else. And so as a Christian, that should set off red flags all over the place for us.
As I was thinking about this social redistribution that that the president advocated for 12 years ago, and I thought about the Bible, and I thought about the parable of the talents, David. If the redistribution was the biblical way, what would have happened at the end of the talents, where 5 becomes 10 and 2 becomes, and there's this, is that the rich would have given to the poor.
Yeah.
But that's not what happens in the biblical talent. In the biblical talents, the one that did nothing with what God gave him is called a wicked and slothful servant. The one that has done well is given more. But in this model of redistribution, what should have happened is that everybody at the end of the day would have, he would have lost his down to 6, and he would have gained it, and then he would have added 5, and we all would have been equal. But that's not the biblical model. The biblical model is that God rewards people for their effort.
Right, and we see that God does not provide equally for everyone. We are all given a different amount of responsibility. We're all given different amounts of anything we could come up with in our life. I know the word you like to use a lot that we've lost the meaning of is providence. In this system, who's our providence?
Right. The government is the providence.
Absolutely.
The government, God.
They have replaced God.
Right.
Why do I need to go to God when the government's paying my bills?
I don't need to be learned to be content in whatever state I'm at, because the government is going to work on my contentment. I'm not going to pray about situations because I'm going to vote towards or elect. I don't need God in this equation right here. Or I need the government, which is God.
It becomes God.
It sure does.
From the moment I'm born to when I die.
Right. This cradle to grave mentality in which a nanny state is created. Are you concerned about it? We are. We're concerned. We're concerned that $16 trillion. We're concerned about the future. David, you've got a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old?
Yep.
Yeah. And right now, each of them presently owe about $54,000, each of them.
Yeah, and what's that going to look like in 20 or 25 years?
Right.
Right.
What is the future for this nation if we don't turn this around? And part of it means that we do not encourage redistribution. We encourage just the opposite, which is earn it, work for it.
Mm-hmm.
Make yourself responsible for your own destiny from a human responsibility perspective, and then trust in God.
Right. And he ends, Soul ends the article with, Barack Obama can endlessly proclaim his slogan of forward, but what he's proposing is going backwards to policies that have failed repeatedly in countries around the world. And he ends with a great thought, yet to many people who cannot be bothered to stop and think, redistribution sounds good.
Well, stop and think. Yeah. What every socialist thinks, David, is that they'll be different.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he failed, and yes, he failed, but I'll be the one that figures it out.
Because I have noble intentions, and I'm a good person, and I'm gonna do it the right way. Whereas Stalin and the rest of these guys did it the wrong way, and so it's a disregard for our sin nature. It's a disregard for humanity in general. I think the Bible's pretty clear that nobody's noble. Nobody's good. Given this amount of power, given this amount of ability for corruption, corruption's going to come.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what we're seeing.
Yeah, that's what we're seeing. Well, thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this article. Again, we're going to put the link to the graph that we want you to see. We'll put that in the overview box so that you can check it out yourself. Have a great day.